Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of The Short Term Show. I'm your host, Avery Carl. And before I introduce our awesome guest today, got a couple announcements. We are still hiring agents in Myrtle Beach, the Smokies, Orlando, the Poconos, and Shenandoah, and I believe some places in North Carolina. So email us at careers@theshorttermshop.com if you are interested. We're also hiring a sales manager to help manage things. So anyway, if you have any interest in that, email careers@theshorttermshop.com. It's a pretty fun place to work, I think. You don't have to go to an office, so you go to the gym in the middle of the day as long as you get your work done. Ooh. Anyway, we also have Short Term Shop Plus available for y'all. I don't know how much promoting we have done in the form of commercials on this show, but wanted to make sure you guys are aware. Short Term Shop Plus, probably one of the most affordable mentorship programs out there for short-term rentals. We'd love to have you, so come see us. It's stsplus.com if you're interested. Now, to the really interesting stuff, I've got Rich Summers on. You're familiar with him. He's been on a time or two before, and we're going to have a chat with him. It's the beginning of 2025, and we're going to talk about what it's like to be investors nowadays. How's it going, Rich?
Avery, happy 2025. It is going so well and so good to catch up with you. It's been a little bit, but I am so excited for this year, and I'm so excited for the next 3 to 4 years that we have in front of us as real estate investors, as entrepreneurs. So much to talk about, but thank you again for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I'm going to throw you a curveball first, because I know you used to be an air traffic controller your first, before you got into real estate investing full time. So I thought about you the other day, because I think you're the only air traffic or former air traffic controller that I have ever met, when there was that accident with the plane hitting the helicopter. And I wanted to get your take on, like, what, how in the world does something like that happen?
Yeah, so it's definitely a rare thing for there to be a mid-air collision. I think it's the first time this has happened in the U.S., American airspace, in quite some time. But unfortunately, you know, it was a what I think happened was the helicopter over the Potomac River. It was a PAT. It was a training flight. Military pilots should be handled with a little bit extra caution. They tend to be a little bit younger. And the military pilot, I believe, had the wrong aircraft in sight. Late at night there, with a lot of the busier airports, it's very common to have, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 planes lined up in a row. It's coming into land. And so at nighttime, you look up as the pilot, you see a bunch of lights coming in. So I think the helicopter had the wrong aircraft in sight. The controller verified that the helicopter pilot had the aircraft in sight, but he didn't call the exact position of the aircraft. Also, the helicopter was 200 feet high. They were on a collision course. So when I read the, or when I listened to the tapes, you know, there was no traffic call to the American coming in. The helicopter was 200 feet high. Yes, he did confirm American was in sight. They said they would maintain visual separation, which puts a lot of the responsibility on the helicopter pilot. But unfortunately, that collision could have been prevented by air traffic control. No traffic call to the American. No collision avoidance instructions were issued at all. And so, unfortunately, I think 76 lives were lost. My heart, my condolences go out to all those families involved. But definitely an unfortunate thing, and a sad day for the aviation industry.
Yeah, yeah, extremely sad. That when I think about, because when I think about being an air traffic controller, which isn't often, it's just every time I land in an airplane and see their little tower, I'm like, that seems extremely stressful. Is it extremely stressful?
It is. It is a very stressful job, and short staffing has been an issue for quite some time. The 11 years that I was there, it hasn't gotten better. It hasn't improved. And so you're often working multiple positions combined, and sometimes it gets busy. So I think in that situation, I believe the controller was working multiple positions combined late at night, and he was busy. So yeah, unfortunately, these things happen, and I'm actually shocked they don't happen more often.
Oh, that doesn't make me feel very good about flying.
They say flying is more safe than driving in a car. So
I don't know. You can't fall out. You're not going to fall out of the sky in a car. You know, you're already on the ground. I feel like there's less that can happen. But anyway, so now we invest in real estate, supposedly to make our lives less stressful. And sometimes sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't.
Ladies and gentlemen, Smarter Short-Term Rentals is now available. The new book from Avery Carl. Smarter Short-Term Rentals. Build a dynamic real estate business and outhost the competition. If you want to take your short-term rental to the next level, pick up the new book, Smarter Short-Term Rentals, wherever books are sold.
So I want to hear about, you know, what you think about being a real estate investor in 2025. So if you want to just give our audience a quick refresher on the types of real estate that you invest in, and then, you know, tell us what you think.
Yeah. So as you alluded to, 6 years ago, I was working full time as an air traffic controller. I knew nothing about real estate, knew nothing about business. And I overheard a coworker in my break room talking about how he just closed on a fourplex in Cleveland. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And so I was like, how did you do that? And he was like, hey, go listen to the Bigger Pockets podcast. Go read the blue book on real estate investing by Brandon Turner. And anyways, I became obsessed. All I had in my name at that time was a 401k. I cashed it out to buy my first couple deals and learn how to raise private money. I started a podcast. The next thing you know, I look up and control about $85 million worth of real estate, boutique hotels. We have a boutique hotel fund, and that's really what we're primarily focused on right now. Have some multifamily and also have some short-term rentals, and then also a property management business where we operate the STRs and the boutique hotels.
All right. So a lot of stuff. And you went pretty quick. So it's only been 6 years since you had a W-2. And I think a lot of people want to unlock that speed. And I think that's also where a lot of people messed up in the height of things in 2021 and buying a lot of properties with those low interest rates. So how were you able to do that without screwing it up?
Yeah, well,
I guess you still could, but
I will say that I've made hundreds of mistakes along the way. We're making a ton of mistakes every single week. They're inevitable, and it's part of the game. So I think for those that are listening to this right now, maybe sitting on the sidelines waiting for the perfect plan, there's no such thing as the perfect plan. And you know, as you alluded to, Avery, I started in 2019, and shortly after that, we had the pandemic, and I made all the mistakes with apartment buildings, made the mistakes with the STRs, but I learned from them. And I think the one thing that helped me is I left once I had enough. I was doing both on the side. So I was working 56 hours a week as an air traffic controller. I was studying real estate on the side. I was buying some real estate on the side. And then when I felt like I had a decent enough grip and enough confidence to go all in, I left the FAA. I walked away from a pension. I completely depleted my 401k. And I went all in on the real estate game. And I think when your back is against the wall and you have no other choice but to make it happen, you will figure out a way. They say businesses don't fail because the business runs out of money. Businesses fail because the entrepreneur gives up. And I think that's definitely the case here.
Yeah, that's 100% the case. That's the number one reason. Only reason I think why people fail is because they quit. And I think a lot of times when you own a bunch of real estate, eventually your number is going to come up. You're going to get a dog at some point. You're going to get something really bad's going to happen. Like a property is going to burn down, or it's going to, any number of things. If you own enough doors for enough years, eventually your number is going to come up. And I think the mistake that I see people make, especially in short-term rental, I mean, a long-term rental too, really in anything, but I deal mostly with short-term. So that's what I see. Mm-hmm. Is they had a rough go on their first one, on their first year, and they sell it after a year. When a lot of times there are things you can do to get it back on track, or just to know, like, okay, you know what? Maybe you got your nose bloodied on your first one, but that doesn't mean let's quit. What can we learn from the bloody nose on the first one? And how can we not bloody our nose on the next one?
Absolutely. And if you look at the last 30 months or so, maybe 36 months now, we've been in a high interest rate environment. And the theme for the last 2.5 years has been survive till 25. And so, you know, talking to other real estate investors, other entrepreneurs, it has not been easy these last 2.5 years. And so for the folks listening to this right now that have been figuring out a way to get things done and figuring out a way to continue operating the real estate portfolio over the last 30 months, just know things will get better and things will get improved. And so if you've been able to figure out this last 30 months, you are going to thrive over these next 30 months. I am very excited with all this opportunity that's in front of us.
So what is the opportunity, would you say, in the market right now?
Well, let's just like back up a little bit and let's just talk about supply and demand fundamentals. If you would have told any real estate investor, myself included, 36 months ago, that the rate environment would have doubled for 30 months straight, and we wouldn't see a big crash in real estate prices in most markets around the country, I would have thought you're crazy. A lot of other real estate investors would have thought you're crazy. And so if you look at it, I think from a supply standpoint, new housing starts are at an all-time low. And then if you look at the demand side, baby boomers are living longer. They're not moving out of their house as young as they once were. And so they're not selling. And then you got the millennials that are buying houses for the first time. They're starting families for the first time. And then you got the Gen Zs that are behind them. And they're moving out of their parents for the first time looking for apartments to rent. So the demand's never been this high. And the supply has never been this short. And I understand why the housing starts are at all-time low. We had the 2020 pandemic. And then we had the high rate environments. The cost of construction has gone up. High interest rates make it harder for these deals to pencil. A lot of uncertainty in the marketplace. And so a lot of builders have pulled back. And so I just think there's a lot of pent-up demand in most markets around the country. I mean, here in San Diego, the median home price in a lot of these more like sought-after neighborhoods has actually gone up over the last 30 months, even though the rate environment has doubled. And so it's definitely a testament to how strong the supply demand fundamentals are. And then the last thing I'll say is this, Avery, let's not forget the Federal Reserve has printed 80% of the money supply since 2020. And yes, a lot of that money is off of the playing field and sitting on the sidelines because of the high rate environment. You can get 5% risk-free in a CD, long-term government bonds. And so a lot of that money is on the sidelines, but the Fed came out in Q4 last year. They announced a couple rate cuts. Spreads are still up. I think there's going to continue to be more rate cuts over these next 12, 18, 24 months. And as those rates come down, a lot of that money that the Fed printed is going to start circulating in the system. And I think we're going to start to continue to see rent growth. We're going to start continuing to see more asset appreciation. And love them or hate them, but we got a real estate investor that just took over office. And the Republicans took over the House. The Republicans took over the Senate. And I believe there's going to be a lot of policies that are real estate friendly, that are business friendly, that are entrepreneur friendly, that are going to go into place. One of those is 100% bonus depreciation, I believe, is likely going to come back this year retroactive.
Retroactive. And, thank you.
Yes. And so all this together, Avery, you know, I know there's a lot of bad news in the marketplace, a lot of speculation. I'm just getting warmed up. Like literally, I'm just getting warmed up. This is just the beginning. I'm going to build a big thing. And so I'm playing the long game. All these boutique hotels that we're buying in our fund, we're buying in great locations, and I want to hold these assets long term. And so when I think big picture, macro perspective, I am very, very excited for these next 4 years. They were already calling this greatest transfer of wealth in American history. 40 million baby boomers retiring in the next 6 years. A lot of real estate is going to change hands. And 4.8 billion people use social media today. The playing field is now level. And so if you're listening to this right now and you listen to Avery's podcast and you are not excited as a real estate investor, as an entrepreneur right now, this game might not be for you.
Well, then, so I will add to that on like the giving some perspective on the real estate sales side of things. So I 100% agree that, you know, people are not buying houses right now. And so few, and I've said this on like every episode of the last 10 episodes, I'm going to say it again. Sorry, guys. Fewer homes were sold in 2024 than in the last 65 years. So every single recession we've had in the last 65 years, more homes changed hands, more people bought houses than last year and 2023 too. So the real estate crash happened. The market is dead. But the prices just didn't come down. And I truly do think, I don't have a crystal ball, of course, but I started buying real estate in 2015 and everybody was like, oh, I should have bought in 2010. I should have bought in 2009 after the Great Recession. I think that this is a time where in 10 years, people are going to say, man, I wish I would have bought in 2023 and 2024 when nobody was buying houses, because right now there's a lot of pent up demand. So the demand exists, but it's not in the marketplace right now because everybody's still waiting for rates to come a little bit down and a little bit down. And being able to go buy a bunch of real estate is like, yeah, it is the interest rate more than you want to pay? Yes, but you have no competition. And I don't think it's ever going to line up where the prices are low, the rates are low, and there's no competition. And there, we got a lot bigger problems going on in the world if all three of those things happen at the same time. So I think everybody is waiting for all those three things to happen at the same time, but they're not going to. So
I completely agree. And so I believe, and I'm speculating, I'm always willing to be wrong. I believe in 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, the news in the marketplace is going to be a lot more positive. And we are going to see a lot more buyers that are currently on the sidelines chasing deals, submitting offers, and it's going to become much more competitive than it is today. We just tied up another boutique hotel, locked it up last night. And this is one of those opportunities. I'm like, we're picking it up below replacement cost. It's in a great market, San Clemente, California, my hometown, and it's got ocean views. And I'm like, this type of deal would not be available 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and it's not going to be available 2 years from now. And so we're going to gladly scoop this up right now while there's not a lot of buyer demand.
Yeah. I will say too, I was looking at our 2024 numbers, obviously last month, and everybody that bought with us, and 80% of the people that closed with us in 2024 were past clients. So experienced investors were buying in 2024, and probably a higher percentage than that already owned short-term rentals, but maybe they didn't buy with us the first time they were in a market we don't operate in. So probably I would say closer to like 90% of our closings, like 800 closings last year, mm-hmm. were people who are experienced investors. And so if you're new and you're listening to this and you're like, wow, the experienced investors are still buying, they probably know something. It's because they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, look, unless you're looking to get out of these deals in the next 12 to 18 months, as long as you're buying great locations, you can buy below basis, and know you have a clear path to add value, and you're thinking long-term big picture, like 7 to 10 year time horizon, I have no problem picking up deals right now, and I will confidently continue buying them.
I think I want to point out, guys, that he said long-term, because I think where a lot of people really got burned in the last 4 or 5 years is holding things short term and expecting to turn a big profit, first of all, but expecting to turn a profit at all, second of all. So one thing that I always like to talk about when it comes to short term rentals and what the income has been doing. So people tend to look at between 2020 and now, and they say, oh, the income has gone down. Actually went back up a little bit in 2024. So we've kind of had a little bit of a bounce, but they're like, oh my God, short-term rentals are dead. And they're looking at these last 5 years. And it's kind of like when you open up your stock portfolio and you're looking at the last 3 month view, and it looks like, oh, or the last 1 month view, or last week, I guess, if you're looking at like tech stocks where things have gone down and you're like, oh my God, it's a bust. But when you zoom out and look at the last 5 years of stocks, it's like, oh, well, yes, there was a little bit blip where it went down here, but we're still way higher than we were 5 years ago. It has steadily trended upward. It's the same thing with short-term rental income. If you're only looking at 2020 to now, it's like, yeah, it went down. Now it's gone back up a little bit. But if you zoom out and look back to 2015, at least in my portfolio, we were making, our properties were grossing a little bit over half of what we do now. Yes, was it lower in 2022 than what we made in 2020? Totally. But we're still almost double what we were 2015. So we still have that steadily trending upward income graph, but you have to zoom out to be able to see it and stop zooming in on this one little part where it was a really weird time in history.
Yeah, I feel like people don't have a lot of patience today. So I know a few folks that got into some STRs and, last year, they're like, oh, it's not performing as good as I had hoped. And like 6 months into it, they're ready to sell for a loss and just pull the plug. I'm like, man, like you might as well hold on to it because this is not the opportune time to sell. Wait for the rate environment to go back down and at least be able to sell it for a higher value. But I just feel like people today, they want the get rich quick scheme and they don't want to have any, delay gratification or having a long-term approach. Real estate is a long-term play. And so if you guys are thinking you're going to get into real estate and get rich quick, like this is not the right game for you. I don't know anyone that's retired off of their first deal. It's just not the case.
Are you afraid of saturation? Well, join Short-Term Shop Plus and let the saturated be afraid of you. Become the best in the business at stsplus.com. If you like what you're hearing, if you're picking up what I'm putting down, you can join me on a live weekly call to talk about your next short-term rental or ask questions about the one you already have. I am live once per week on Zoom. I would love to have you come and say hello. It's strquestions.com. That's strquestions.com. Come and join us.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody's heard somebody on the internet say that they've done that. And, you know, everybody's situation is different. I retired off of a couple because I was making $35,000 a year. That's not hard to replace. You know, I wasn't I wasn't somebody who had a $250,000 a year salary trying to replace my income off of two short-term rentals. It's just not going to happen. So it is very much a get rich slow plan. And I think that so many people expect to jump in and they hear stories like, yes, I did build a 200 something door portfolio in 5 or 6 years, but that's not normal. You could if you really wanted to, but that's not the expectation. My advice would be to go slow. And you do have to have patience. And I want to ask you, speaking of patience, what you think about whether in short terms or in hotels, the crazy theming, like when you go like full on, like the way you have to theme in Orlando, like you have to theme hardcore in Orlando to do well. But in markets where you don't have to do that, what are your thoughts? I have some thoughts, but I want to hear what yours are.
Yeah, so for me and what we're doing here at Summers Capital, I'm always looking at the exit. And so whenever we're buying these deals, we're renovating them, I'm thinking, okay, what is the ideal next buyer? Who is that ideal buyer? And what are they going to want? And so I think in terms of themes, I think they can work in specific markets. But for the most part, like we're buying a lot of hotels, California coastal, near the water. And I want to have multiple exit strategies. And so for us, we're renovating these properties to obviously appeal to the average guest avatar, but also appeal to the next buyer who comes in and picks up these properties. And so I think having STRs, one unit to where, you know, it could be a single family property that's decked out to a T for a bachelorette party, specifically in Scottsdale, Arizona, let's just say, or Nashville, Tennessee. And it could crush, but you know, if you take a 40 room hotel and you deck out all 40 rooms and the lobby and the common space to appeal to a more of a niche type of avatar, I think that you're going to be leaving a lot of money on table in generally speaking, when I look at these deals.
Oh, I love it when people agree with me and I don't have to lead them into it. Yeah, I totally agree. And what we've seen on the sales side of the resale of these properties, like 100%, they do crush income wise. You're going to make more money. That's a given. But what you have to look at is how much money you're putting into this crazy theming and that doesn't add actual appraisal value to the property. Mm-hmm. And how long you're going to hold it, because you have to plan to hold these things, I would say at least 10 years to recoup the amount that you're putting into the property. So, you know, mural walls, a lot of times pools don't add as much value as people think. So it might cost $100,000 to put in a pool and maybe only adds $30,000 worth of value. All of these crazy things that I've seen people buying $500,000 houses and putting $250,000 worth of amenities in. That's great. It will crush the income, but you're not going to be able to sell that anytime soon and be able to get back that $250,000 cash. Well, that $250,000 cash, you can go get a vacation home loan on another $1 million property. So to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And when we have gone to list some of these properties to sell them, And they want these luxury prices usually because they're usually nice properties. But what we're seeing is the luxury buyer doesn't, the feedback we'll get is, hey, you know, this is a $3 million property. We're kind of expecting it to be more of a high-end luxury vibe and not like murals on the walls and it feels childish. So you really have to look at the long term of, you know, if you're brand new, I don't think that's a good idea because you don't know if you're even going to like this. You might hate this. So going in and over amenitizing, even though it will impact the income, you have to look at how long you plan to hold it and what your exit strategy is going to be. And if you're going to sell it, you may have to undo all of that theming that you did in order to get it sold.
Yeah.
And it's just unlikely you're going to recoup that amount.
I'm glad you brought this up because I think this is one of the biggest mistakes that I see new folks that are getting into the boutique hotel game make is they're just thinking, how do I close on this deal and get to the finish line? But they're not thinking big picture. They're not thinking the end game. They're not thinking with exit in mind. And so what is your ideal exit strategy? And who is the ideal next buyer, whether it's 3 years down the road, 5 years down the road, or 10 years down the road? You got to be thinking that. And one of the exit strategies with boutique hotels that can be a fruitful exit is, let's just say you build up a portfolio of 5, 7, maybe 10 hotels. Now you have the ability to exit to a bigger hospitality group that is looking to pick up a swoop of 6, 7, 10 hotels at once so they can take advantage of economies of scale. And those type of bigger groups are not looking for these crazy razzle dazzle, you know, super niche down themes. They're looking for hotels that are going to fit their brand and appeal to the modern traveler, that are going to appeal to the masses.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And it can be really cool, the super themed stuff, but it shrinks your potential buyer pool from X amount to Y amount. It's usually significantly smaller. So that's stuff that I want new investors to pay attention to. That's great if you want to do that. It makes for really good Instagram content, but it isn't always the wisest choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about, and guys, one note here, we're going to put the exact episode number that we interviewed Rich. If you guys are listening to this and you're like, why is she not asking them more about how to do hotels? So we did that on a previous episode with Rich. So we'll put in the show notes a link to the previous episode so you can learn exactly what his strategy has been and what he's doing. But anyway, just wanted to note that before we move on to the next topic.
I love that, Avery. And always great to catch up. You were on my podcast out here in San Diego spring of last year. Amanda Hahn was out here as well. Mm-hmm. And always good vibes. I've always been a fan. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you. You know what? I always am surprised by how cold San Diego is.
It was chilly this morning walking in. We're talking probably 60 degrees, maybe 58 degrees. But you got the morning overcast layer and the humidity gets a little bit higher. There's a little bit of moisture in the water and it makes it feel cooler.
Yeah. I don't do that. I like Florida. I need heat and humidity.
There you go.
All right. So let's give the people a little bit of what they want now that we've kind of teased hotels. So if somebody is listening to this today, what would be your advice for somebody new? Maybe they're new to the hotel space. Maybe they have a few short-term rentals, single families already, but they want to scale up into something more commercial. What would be your advice?
Yeah. So the first thing that you really want to get clear on is, what is your ability to buy and what are the market selections or market areas that you want to go into? And so first figure out your ability to buy. So are you going to use your own equity? Are you going to sell some STRs in order to 1031 exchange into a boutique hotel? Are you going to go raise private capital? Right? Which is fine. So maybe you're going to raise money from friends and family. And so figure out your ability to buy. And then from there, figure out the markets that you want to be in. So for us, for example, here at Summers Capital, we are searching and targeting California coastal. These got to be waterfront assets or near the beach with ocean views or in A-plus locations along California. And then I would say from there, you got to figure out, okay, what are the Airbnb regulations like? Because most real estate investors, long-term rental investors, multifamily investors, they tend to like landlord friendly areas such as Florida, such as Texas, such as Arizona, for obvious reasons. You don't need to deal with squatters. You don't need to deal with landlord tenant rights and all this sort of stuff. For us with boutique hotel investing, we think opposite. We like the more liberal areas because the liberal areas tend to have tighter or pending Airbnb regulations, which bodes very well for boutique hotels. And so the tighter the Airbnb regs, the more demand it brings to the boutique hotels. I own a luxury Airbnb out in Scottsdale. It crushes. And I love that property. I don't want to ever own a boutique hotel in Scottsdale because there's 6,000 other short-term rentals in that market. I don't want to compete with them. And so that's number two. Once you figure out the market you want to go into and you know that it does have tight Airbnb regulations, which will bode well, then you want to go and build relationships with these brokers. 95% of these boutique hotels are traded through a broker. And you can't just pick up the phone and call these brokers on LoopNet. Like, you have to literally build genuine relationships. Go become their friends and go visit them. Go take them out to lunch. Go walk properties with them. Get to know them. Give them the confidence that you have the ability to act quick should they bring you an opportunity. Give them the confidence that you have the ability to get a deal to the finish line should they bring you an opportunity. And that's really where the secret sauce is. And so, you know, I think over these last several years, I've done a good job of building true relationships with these brokers. A lot of the brokers that I've traded with and transacted with, I've become friends with, like, legitimately. And that's definitely took us a long way. And then I would say the other best way to find deals, Avery, is through bridge lenders. There's a lot of commercial real estate bridge lenders throughout the country that lend on different asset classes within commercial real estate. And so build relationships with those bridge lenders because they all have deals that go bad. And when those deals go bad for a variety of reasons, you want to be first in line to pick up some of those deals. We picked up a 40-room boutique hotel up in Lake Chelan, Washington in December of 2023 directly from our bridge lender. And because we had that relationship, this hotel had been developed in 2021. The borrower was a developer. He was not a hotel operator. He got into some trouble developing a bunch of condos in another market, stopped making his debt service payments on all his real estate. A bridge lender took this asset back November of 23, and they were like, hey, Rich, we got to get this off our books by the end of this year. We're not hotel operators. We can finance it to you for 0% interest for the first 6 months, and we can sell it to you for a nice discount. And so we went ahead and moved forward on that deal, and we were able to pick it up for, you know, almost 40% off.
Whoa.
2021 construction, because we had that relationship with our bridge lender, because they trusted us. And so I would say that's probably the number two source to find boutique hotel deals right now, is go and build relationships with these bridge lenders, because they all have deals that go bad and you want to be on that list to find out about those deals.
Oh, that's a good tip. Very good tip.
I'm full of tips, Avery.
Love it. Okay. So, all right, we're coming to the end of the show. Normally we ask people, well, I'm going to do it again.
Let's do it. Okay. My perspective's always changed.
All right. So last three questions of the show. And you kind of already said this, but if you have anything to add, what advice would you give a new investor? Let's say not hotel, somebody just getting into real estate today, going to buy their first single family. What advice would you give them?
Stop listening to the people closest to you. And start listening to the people closest to your dreams. It's the biggest life hack that nobody talks about. And this includes your parents sometimes. It includes family members, includes friends. Take advice from people that are closest to your dreams, not the people that are closest to you. This game is all about being in the right rooms. I always say, get in rooms where your dreams are others' realities. So if you're looking to pursue real estate investing, whether it's short-term rentals, whether it's boutique hotels, whether it's office, like whatever you want to invest in, like, go get in those rooms of people that are successful and go pay them for their time so you can get the information needed to get from point A to point B at a much quicker manner, and also save from all the headache and the losses and all the mistakes that you could be making. That is the hack.
All right. That is great advice, because everybody has somebody that they know who, like, tried to do real estate one time and their tenant burned their house down and ruined their life. And so they never get started because that happened to somebody that they know, that they have no idea what the circumstances were.
It's so good.
I actually asked you the second question first accidentally. First question, what advice would you give 20-year-old Rich?
Ooh, you know, I don't know. For me, it's interesting because I didn't know anything about business or real estate until 11 years working air traffic control. And so I think for me, I would probably say, learn about business, learn about real estate investing at an earlier age. I wish I would have started sooner. I mean, I'm at 33, Avery. I discovered real estate investing. I discovered business. At 33, I thought I peaked. at 39, I know this is just the beginning. And so I would have told 20-year-old self to learn the game sooner, because if I would have started at 20, I don't even know where I'd be right now.
Yeah, same. All right. And last question, what's your favorite book since last time that's impacted your mindset?
Your Next Five Moves by Patrick Bed-David. I'm a big PBD fan. You know, real estate investing is great. Learn the strategy. But if you guys want to grow a big thing, like, you got to learn business architecture. You got to learn how to become a good leader. You got to learn how to deal with people and personalities. And you got to deal with multitasking and putting out a lot of fires and a lot of stuff. So Your Next Five Moves by Patrick Bed-David. Great business architecture, mindset, how to build a big thing. And yeah, again, big fan of PBD.
All right. Well, Rich, thank you so much for coming on. If our listeners want to follow you, be mentored by you, anything like that, how can they do that?
Yeah. So everything's on Instagram at rich_Summers. That's S-O-M-E-R-S. If you guys are interested in our boutique hotel mastermind, where we have 80 members, 43 hotels owned collectively, it's a forward-thinking group. This game is all about being in the right room. So you can go to hotelinvesting.com. And then lastly, if you're looking to invest passively, we have a real estate fund where we're buying hotels. You can go to summerscapital.com/invest.
All right. Well, Rich, thank you so much again for coming on.
Appreciate you, Avery. Thank you.